That's usually what we do. That's like even when we shot Chris Pratt, we're like, let's get a trampoline there. Let's get a motorcycle, do something. Because we hadn't worked with them before. And you're like, just have things that they can be doing, because it can be really difficult to get someone to like just start giving stuff up and create stuff for you. So it's like you have to have those ideas going in. I mean, Chris Pratt's probably the best subject we've ever had, because he's just constantly doing crazy shit. So you're like, just make sure the camera's full and ready and just go.
Yeah.
If you lead an interesting life, good pictures will happen.
Oh, nice. You might well be my sexiest sounding guest.
Go somewhere you've never been before and take a camera.
We had this gorgeous Mediterranean light just flowing in.
Which house do we live?
A Dartford.
Very nice.
Your first 10,000 pictures are your worst.
Let's sit down. Let's have a cup of tea.
Welcome to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, a very warm welcome, as always, to another episode of the Standout Photography Show with me, Matthew Walker, where it is my honour and privilege to sit down with the finest working photographers in the world to unpack their systems, workflows, and find out what enables them to perform consistently at the top of their profession. On this week's show, episode 17, I welcome celebrity portrait photographers Derek and Drew Riker, a.k.a. The Riker Brothers. That is rikerbrothers.com on the World Wide Webs and at Riker Brothers on Instagram. Born in Iowa City and growing up in a small town west of Chicago, twin brothers Derek and Drew Riker were introduced to photography by their father. After graduating from the University of Illinois with degrees in economics and both taking jobs in Chicago, the brothers were left feeling unfulfilled in the business world. It was a chance encounter on vacation in Miami Beach that started their careers in photography, when they were scouted to be models for the famous fashion label Abercrombie and Fitch. Their first assignment was shooting with the mighty Bruce Weber for Vogue, and after 2 days on location immersed in the creative environment, it was clear what their new career path would be. Living between New York and Miami over the next several years, they became obsessed with fashion photography and imagery. They were lucky enough to learn from some of their idols, including, of course, Bruce Weber, Arthur Elgort, and their close friend and mentor, Herb Ritz. An emphasis on natural light allows them the freedom of movement and to be spontaneous. With one behind the camera to technically compose, the other is free to connect directly with the subject, giving them an amazing ability to capture authentic moments. The brothers are currently based in beautiful Los Angeles, where they joined me on a scorching hot Tuesday morning for episode 17 of the Standout Photography Show. Throughout our conversation, we discuss portrait photography, working with celebrity clients, including someone I hugely admire, Mr. Mark Wahlberg, directing models, shooting quickly, learning on the job, backlighting subjects, shooting with single lights, plugins, creating a film look on digital, and confidence on set. Without further ado, please join me from Los Angeles with none other than Derek and Drew, the Riker Brothers. Derek and Drew, aka the Riker Brothers, welcome to the Standout Photography Show. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Absolute pleasure. And I feel slightly honored. This is the first interview I've done with two people on the episode.
Wow. Yeah, see, teams are getting more popular these days, so you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure there will be more.
I'm sure there will. And you're also across the pond in beautiful Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, super hot today, so not, you know. But it is a great place to be for what we do, so it's great.
Now, out of interest, you say super hot. I'm over here in the UK, and it's quite hot here. I'm guessing it's not as hot as where you are. What's the temperature this morning? And bear in mind, it's 10 o'clock in the morning for you guys.
It's 82 Fahrenheit right now. So that's actually not too bad yet, but there's been humidity as well. And it'll get up
to almost 100 today.
Yeah, it's going to be bad today.
We're in a heat wave, so.
Oof.
Yeah, it's not a whole lot of fun.
Goodness me. Goodness me. Well, look, how do you... This may sound like a really obvious question, but how do you personally describe yourselves and your work as photographers?
Do you want to go there?
You always.
I mean, I guess we would consider ourselves mostly like we're portrait photographers. Yeah. It's really just about people. Even though we started off our career in the fashion side, because we were models and started, we got into the business because we were scouted to be models when we were in our 20s.
I was a banker out of college. We lived in Chicago, right out of college. And, I was a banker. He was in sales, and we were on our second year at our jobs. We were on vacation in South Beach, Miami, and we were scouting to model. And,
kind of the heyday of kind of like fashion. What we think is like fashion photography that stuff was going down in Miami. You know, Johnny Versace lived down there. Bruce Weber was, you know, still has a house right north of Miami. They're like all these huge, you know, photographers spent time there.
And you would see all these huge productions on the beach that you would never, you know, growing up in the Midwest mostly, you know, you never see any, know nothing about the entertainment business or TV shows, fashion magazines or...
Yeah, and Miami Beach wasn't kind of like as popular as it was now. It was kind of this like hidden place where people could really hide out. Like, I mean, Mickey Rourke had a bar that we used to go to called The Spot that he was there like every night. And you would there be supermodels playing pool with, and we're like...
Yeah.
You know, and any guy our age at the time who was down there was like, okay, I gotta stay here. I gotta figure out how this can be my life or whatever.
Yeah, that's basically what we did. Yeah.
But the one, you know, thing about being twins is we did get scouted by these modeling agencies to be like, hey, would you consider doing this? And I mean, Bruce Weber had put us on hold for who we didn't know who he was at the time. Yeah. And we were like, okay.
Literally, we're at the end of our vacation. We just thought it was funny. We did like a couple test shoots with photographers while we were there. We just go back to Chicago, where we're from, at our jobs, and all of a sudden, there were no cell phones or anything back then. They're calling us at work, you know, these agencies asking, like, you know, we have these agencies from Miami calling you. Bruce Weber was really interested in you. Have you guys ever thought of this? You should come and see us, you know, at the agencies in Chicago. So,
and back then, you did make quite a bit of money doing it. You know, it was especially male models at that point. They started making a ton of money, which they don't. You can't make that kind of money.
No, I don't think it's the same
these days. But I mean, I certainly wasn't happy in my job. And the longest story ever right now, longer, is that we ended up diving in. We quit our jobs and and immediately we're shooting with Bruce Weber, we moved to Miami Beach, and we're immediately booked on these things. And so, I mean, we really have kind of like the dream story for people who are interested in photography, because it was our father's hobby too. So it was something we loved from the time we were kids.
Yeah, our dad was always, he took pictures at everything, our whole entire lives. Like,
yeah, I mean, our sister still can't stand him because he always had a camera up in her face.
He didn't miss one sporting event. He was a lawyer, like, in Chicago and then Manhattan when we were in high school. He still was at every game with a camera shooting everything we ever did.
And he became a printer in New York. Like,
when we put our jobs to model, our dad actually started taking printing classes in downtown, like at the New School in Manhattan. After work, like that whole process.
And it was brilliant because when we first started actually shooting pictures, he's a color printer too. So he would print our whole books out and stuff. So we kind of had a competitive advantage at that point for people, because it was super expensive to try to start being a photographer back then, with paying for film, paying for processing, you know, having it printed. I mean, there's no such thing as retouching back then, unless you are a famous photographer, you know.
Because we like to shoot, like, clearly portraiture and people. We really want to get authentic, real moments. And shooting as a team, that's the whole process. Is like, Derek mostly shoots now, and I just sit there and just talk to them. Or even if we're shooting in studio, I'll just have them putting their hands in their pockets, kind of walking back and forth like this as Derek's shooting, to get these really real moments. Even if he's doing tight stuff, we like to have them doing something.
It's just basically to distract people, you know, because a lot of what we do is entertainment or a lot of people aren't, they're not used to, they're not supermodels. So it's like, even actors sometimes are, you know, not real comfortable in front of the camera. Some are amazing, but a lot aren't. So then you have to kind of over direct them to get them comfortable. Or basically that's, as a team, it's cheating, because Yeah. Drew's basically distracting the whole time with like talking, connecting with them while I'm just literally shooting away and, you know, so I mean, that's really kind of the secret to what I think a lot of times our pictures are different, because they actually have lots of energy and life and connection, because it's not so posed. Like, we're not, you know, I mean, a lot of fashion photography is very stark, looking off, not, you know, ours, we like it to be very full of life, and, you know, we love smiles. We, you know, so.
Do you think that you're, because you spent so many years in front of the camera, do you think that that has helped you in your work behind the camera when it comes to working with models?
Yes. I mean, that's like literally the whole reason we do what we do, because I was quite anxious as a model. I hated being in front of the camera, but being twins, and I understood like the draw of us, and we worked a lot, we're making a lot of money, so I just kind of forced myself to keep modeling and doing it. But I just was horrified half the day shooting. So as a photographer, I literally do this just to like over coddle people to make sure that they're comfortable and don't have to feel what I felt.
Yeah, and then there's days when you're modeling back then, you're shooting with world's greatest photographers one day who are brilliant and are like, they have a process, and it's like, you know, basically like Bruce Weber is kind of like, it's like in the Peter Beard school, just create an event and like have a good time, and then the pictures happen. You know, his was like going to, like a Bruce Weber shoot was literally like going to a summer, you know, pool party and it's like, there's food happening. There's, you know, and people are just hanging out.
And Bruce is just a voyeur, kind of capturing everything. And then he would kind of key on a couple people and then like maybe do little bits of direction. But it's like, that's why his photos are so real and authentic.
There might be 20 different people on his set of models that have all gone to style them. You know, you go to the styling house, they dress you up, and then it's kind of like just hang out. And then the way you really become a great model is that you learn that it's like you have to create the moment for Bruce to notice you. So it's kind of like a pose off, or like, it's weird because you can see things like happening. You're like, oh, these guys have been working, you know,
they work with Bruce a lot. Like,
and they start wrestling and or whatever. And it's like, oh,
they're trying to get him to come over there to shoot him. And you're like, yeah, he's kind of genius that he got known for that. So he would just book a ton of models to start just creating their own stuff, and then he would go over there and just capture that.
Like, that's why a lot of his stuff looks like really authentic, real stuff, because that's kind of how it's, and everyone kind of knew it who was getting booked for him, or even your bookers would be like, listen, when you go there, you got to perform. You have to, you know, like create and be willing to do whatever it is that, you know, what's happening that day. You know, it's not some place where you go and just are like,
well, it's, and then for us shooting entertainment with actors and celebrities and stuff, you really don't have that freedom so much, because they only have a limited amount of time, and they're not just going to create without you telling them what to do. Like, so you have to kind of create the scene for them, direct them specifically what they're going to, you have to have it all thought out so that you can, I mean, the first time we ever shot Mark Wahlberg, we literally had an hour and a half at the middle of the day from like noon to 1:30 in the afternoon in a black parking lot. Like in the middle of it.
Yeah, and we mostly shoot, like ideally we prefer to be shooting on location, outdoors.
All available light.
Available light. Yeah, and so it's like the minute you get the email that it's like, it's going to be from 12 to 2 in the middle of the summertime where the sun is literally directly above and we're outside, we're like, we can't get scrims big enough to do something that we're going to like to do. Yeah. But it's like, you know,
You do what you can. You put with Mark, the whole thing is we just created a day, like a bunch of activities to start with. We knew we'd play basketball, so we had a basketball hoop set up, you know, with the truck, so he could just be shooting. And that's how we started the shoot, is when we were just talking and hanging out and like getting to know each other. Like, hey, I'm Drew, Derek. You know, we had some mutual friends.
We're the same age, so, and we were in LA back, you know, 3-4 years ago, so we kind of had some mutual people we knew. So,
but then we just had him shooting hoops while we were doing that, and then we connected over the people that we knew commonly, and then he just started being himself and shooting, and then we kind of drag him from there to another situation quickly, do a couple portraits, and then
that's usually what we do. That's like even when we shot Chris Pratt, we're like, let's get a trampoline there. Let's get a motorcycle, do something, because we hadn't worked with them before. And you're like, just have things that they can be doing, because it can be really difficult to get someone to like just start giving stuff up and create stuff for you. So it's like you have to have those ideas going in. And I mean, Chris Pratt's probably the best subject we've ever had because he's just constantly doing crazy shit. So you're like, just make sure the camera's full and ready and just go.
Do you think it's quite interesting because I was looking at your client list and you've mentioned Chris Pratt, you've mentioned Mark Wahlberg. Included also in your client list is wonderful David Harewood, who's a lovely actor who I've worked with previously.
He's so great.
Wonderful man. Anne Hathaway, Isla Fisher, Halle Berry. These are all, they're not just high-profile people, they're also high-performing people.
Yeah.
Mark Wahlberg, for example, with the 4AM Club. Yeah. Incredible. Do you think, do you think working with high-performing clients helps you guys to perform at your very best and keeps you on your toes as well?
That's an interesting question. That's probably why we are the way we are. Like, even just hearing that question, like,
That might be why, because it's literally, it's just a lot of pressure. That, you know, when you get to where we are, it's literally because, you know, there's an intense amount of pressure. The first, you have some A-list film actor who's promoting this $200 million film. And I mean, when people are behind that and they're going to invest money in you to get these pictures and whatever, it's a shit ton of pressure. There's a lot of people around.
The point is, so inspired by getting, because we've shot Mark all the time. And after we shot him the first time, he actually invited us to shoot in his home. And we've shot about four different jobs where we just come to his home and shoot him there. So just having that trust, but being around him and seeing how he lives his life, you're like, it's very inspiring. We're like, oh, this is what uber successful, you know, people in the entertainment business do and how they act. And I feel like, oh my God,
I need to raise the expectations on myself. Yeah. It's like, holy cow.
We're just lucky we've gotten to, with our list of people, we've gotten to have, you know, work with so many incredible, like.
Yeah, and luckily everyone we have worked with has been really like people that were connected and, you know, didn't have a bad day the day we shot them, you know, because it's like, you understand, you might get someone who's just, this isn't going to be a good day regardless of who's shooting this, you know. So it's like we've kind of lucked out that we've never had that, like, oh my God, we didn't get it.
Like,
holy
this
shit,
is a disaster.
This is, you know, so.
You mentioned a couple of interesting things there. Derek, you just touched on pressure because it's another thing that I've spoken with a lot of photographers about, because you're right, there's, on particularly larger scale shoots, there's a lot of people, there's big budgets, there's time restraints, like you guys said, particularly with high profile clients. How do you guys, well, firstly, actually, do you feel that pressure? And if so, what techniques have you developed to use it to your advantage and get the best from your work?
Thankfully, the highest pressure ones, you know, we've been doing this quite a while, so it's like we were able to just kind of harness it and kind of like, I would say it's kind of like being an athlete who wants the ball at the end of the game or something like that, because it's like, I don't know what it is, but when that's on, that's where we actually excel.
Like we were athletes growing up and stuff, and it does feel like almost an athletic thing, a leadership type of role where you just like...
And then just to be able, the one good thing about being twins in that kind of setting is that you're really a politician on those sets, and you need to be working all the right people, you know. And it's like
that's shooting in a team lets you like deal with the pressure much differently. Yeah, better.
Yeah,
I'd
hate to, like, honestly, a lot of those I by myself it would have been nearly impossible, because there might be shit going down with your assistants and like technical things with like the studio, but now you've got like the publicist is now in your ear. The management is like, he's got to go quickly.
The fact that we can just split up and kind of put out both fires and then come back and keep everyone focused, you know, is...
Yeah, because it's those things that you just don't know when you first start taking pictures. It's like, oh my God, your biggest nightmare is going to be like the, you know, the exec from Netflix who's there, who's really in charge, who's like telling you, you know, what you have to do at that moment when that's not what you want to be doing, you know.
Yeah, one of the things we learned early on in the business of shooting entertainment and actors and stuff is that like speed is like of the utmost like importance. Oh, yeah. Like how fast the shoot goes is literally maybe the number one thing. Like a couple of our friends are the biggest publicists in town. That's how we've gotten to like interact and meet a ton of people. But his first thing is like, just be fast and people will love you because that's what they're going to remember about the day. Half the time, the celebrity may not even see these pictures because they don't care. They don't, you know.
Just know what you're there for. And it's like, and guess what? This picture isn't important. I know maybe your first time shooting them, but if you want to shoot again.
I mean, they're all important. Of course, every photo is completely 100% amazingly important. But that was
probably the third time we shot Mark Wahlberg. We got done in 20 minutes, and we did like four setups. And he was just like, "Are you sure?" And we're like,
yeah, "We're done."
And we're just like, "This is just a point that we're gonna do just for effect." And it's like, "Nope, we got it." And it's just about confidence. And we did know we got it, so it's like we didn't.
Yeah.
But after you've been editing shoots for so many years, and when you do it and reading people, you know, like you're like, "Yes, we got it," and he's only gonna go south right now.
Yeah,
it's only going to get worse. It's like, let's just call it. And it's like, are you confident? And then we look and it's like, yeah, let's just call it.
It'll
blow their minds that they just got it in 20 minutes. And it's like,
yeah.
And then when they get the pictures, they're like, holy cow.
This actually also comes from a story. Like Herb Ritz was a very close friend and like our mentor. Actually the photographer we worked with a lot as models. And then when we started shooting and told him, then he kind of coddled us and said, and when we showed him our book for the first time, it was like, oh my God, like, it was so nerve-wracking to see what he was going to say about it. But he was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, you guys should really... We were living in New York, between New York and then Miami, had a place in Miami in the winter. So he's like, why don't you guys come move out to LA and, like, come on my sets and, like, you know, we can work with you. And then when you guys are ready for a good agent,
we'll is, like, an incredible blessing at that time in our careers to be on sets with Herb Ritz, working with... The creative director at the time was Charles Churchward, who turned to be one of our greatest friends. And, you know, you're on set seeing how this stuff gets done at the highest level. You're seeing, we were watching the cover of Vogue being shot, plus the interior, plus that one shoot with Gwyneth.
Yeah.
It was like Kevin Aucoin's doing makeup, doing like transforming Gwyneth Paltrow into like Elizabeth Taylor and stuff like that, which is just genius. But you can actually see how the sausage is made. You're like, oh my God, okay. Well, this is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And then you could see how Herb is working with Charlie, and Charlie's telling us like, well, we just don't like the shadow in this picture, so we want to soften this up. So we just changed the light out from, you know, the softbox to the... Herb did these Fresnel strobes, which is, you know... But no, but that's what I'm just trying to
say. I love how we get off track like this, because the whole point of this question was
look, you cannot go off track on this podcast.
Right with others too. We can gab like crazy. It's horrible.
But we never get anything done in our personal lives.
The point is, this one story about Herb, like he literally was shooting like the Chanel campaign. I forget who the model was or whatever.
Yes.
He literally shot like a half a roll of film and was like, we got it. That's it. Like, let's stop. He's like, We're going to break for lunch. Let's go process this, break for lunch, come back. And like the client was like, that's amazing. I mean, not he was huge and people gave him that respect and they were like, yeah, that's the shot, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That never happened today.
I'm not sure anyone gets away with that stuff anymore. Because even the big photographers, it's like they're clearly not making what they used to be making like in the 90s and the early 2000s with all the licensing dollars and stuff that they used to make for all the billboards and stuff. No one gets paid the way they did in the 90s. I mean, the amount of money he was making on every single job in licensing, you're like, that's never happening again, you know?
Yeah. So. It's interesting. Your path into the industry is fascinating, and it's not one that I've explored with other guests on the show. When you were modeling, do you remember the point and what was it where you started to enjoy what was happening behind the camera versus what you were doing as models? Because, and I don't mean this as idle flattery, you both could quite easily still have a very good career as models now, but you've chosen to go behind the camera. Do you remember the moment and why you started to go behind?
From the first shoot with Bruce Weber, I mean,
first shoot ever.
So funny. I actually brought, my dad had gotten us like our first professional cameras. I had like a Canon.
I have a Nikon FM1. They're over there, which is like our first little, you know.
And I had mine on the shoot and was shooting pictures of Bruce Weber during the shoot because we were so fascinated at like, this is
huge
amazing.
Production.
After like, being at a bank, you know, in Chicago, like during the winter, and then for your job, you're literally on this set
this mansion in Boca Raton, yeah.
And just, it was so fascinating. We're like, oh my God, this is the life I want. This is insane. He's just a photographer taking pictures, and he clearly makes a fortune at what he does, and we had no clue that this existed in the world.
Yeah.
So.
And then, yeah. Yeah, and then, I mean, and then it's like, I mean, we were so interested in photography to begin with, but you're like, with Bruce, I was like, this is how this works. Like, you know,
yeah.
Okay, well, that's great. And then my next job was like a catalog thing, which was a total disaster because you're like, you have to model now. And I'm like, oh, I've only been on Bruce Weber sets before, so I didn't realize you. Now you got to like dance and have a routine. And I was like, but then those photographers don't even direct you. It's just kind of like, you got to go. And yeah. I'm like, oh, well, this is horrible, you know, but you start observing every single person that's shooting and why it looks the way it does. You're always trying to get the final product to see like when it comes out. And back then it was great because it would be out in a magazine that you could find easily. It was like, oh, that one's in, you know.
So it was, the best part was being on these big shoots and then getting to see the magazine come out like 3 months later, 4 months later. And then you see the images that they get in their edit, and you learn so much from just seeing what they end up producing.
Oh, especially like Bruce Weber, our first thing was Abercrombie in like 1994. Seven. One of the last shots of the day is very, just like really kind of getting low light, and the light was coming from behind, and it felt so dark in the front, and I'm just like, is this going to be any good? But I'm like, Bruce shoots this stuff. And then when it came out, it was the biggest portrait at Abercrombie and Fitch of me.
It was a headshot.
Where it's like a headshot, but it was this backlit. I'd never seen like backlight like that before.
Like
a
light backlit, like this cloud. Yeah. It was gorgeous.
And right? I was like, oh my God. So the backlight stuff is what creates that beautiful, ethereal kind of like that light that you see, and you're like, oh my God.
Which is funny because we're on sets now with like publicists shooting celebrities, and we'll do like this backlight stuff. And then they're like, is this looking any good? Because we're not using any lights, and in person it may not look fantastic. But we're like, no, this is the best shot of the day. Just, you know, trust, you know, come on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, later on they get it.
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand how backlit shots are shot. It's like, yeah. Oh, it's just...
Because they're shooting it on their iPhone, and it's making up.
Too dark, or...
So then it looks really bad.
Of course.
Expose it properly.
Of course.
It's like, oh, wow. It looks amazing. So.
But then also, you know, I mean, luckily, I mean, it was literally the best education in photography ever because it's like we got to work with Arthur Elgort a couple times and watching him work.
Which is
like,
very similar.
His was like going on vacation with your grandfather, and he had like a little point and shoot 35 millimeter thing hanging around his neck. He shot with like 3 or 4 different cameras.
Yeah.
And it would just be like, get dressed. We're going to dinner at a restaurant, then you put a flash on a camera and just do it. It felt like you were at your grandfather's.
Yeah,
like
vacation.
I'm like, are these pictures going to be like, what is this going to be even, you know?
Yeah.
And then when those come out in Vogue and you're like, what,
beautiful.
You know?
Yeah.
And that one was with Stella Tennant, the one that was in West Palm Beach.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, holy shit, that's just brilliant. Like he's just shooting real life. Like we were just said, you know, like, and he's never using lights, you know, never
photographers
using...
we ever shot like in the beginning. None of them are using any lights or reflectors even. It's like Bruce and Arthur and stuff. So, they're our biggest influences, really. I mean, then Herb, of course, and Herb was kind of the same way, but he was doing more direct light and things like that. And then you'd have lights, you know, outside sometimes. But it's also simple what they did. Like, Herb,
it's not complicated at all. It really is just...
And then even with like our closeness with Herb, when we moved to L.A. originally, we would go to dinner like almost every Friday. And we'd have like little chats about things. He was talking to us about what films to use with certain people, like certain actresses may have bad skin. He's like, you might want to use 400 speed film to make it a little grainier. And, but he's like, for studio, he's like, I just use one main light source, very simple.
He's like, don't stress out about studio.
Like, just do that. You know, for men, maybe bring it off to the side. But it was all so basic. And even when we shot with him, it was always like one light, you know, like ever in studio. So.
Yeah.
Was your interest, when you were working as models, was your interest in what was happening behind the camera, was that to improve you as models, or was that because you always had one eye on a career behind the camera?
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was kind
or
of...
Or a combination.
Kind of both, because...
But I remember always, because even when we were modeling, we were always taking pictures of our friends and, like, testing people just for fun, because we always were like so fascinated by the process. And you'd be on these beautiful locations, and it just seemed like a waste that you shouldn't shoot something there. And we're like, get one of your friends or ask somebody to come out and, like, let's go do it. Or we just shoot each other, you know?
I mean, so in the beginning, it's like, we love photography, but weren't thinking of it literally, like, I'm going to be a photographer, like, right away. It was just something we continued to do was shooting pictures. It was literally when we were 29, going to be turning 30 that year, that we're like...
And which was also Y2K, and we thought the world was going to end.
We're like, it was ridiculous.
Plus, we're just like, the millennium bug.
TV, and that's the true passion. Like, you know,
yeah.
The Celestine Prophecy came out that year.
Changed my life, the Celestine Prophecy.
No. Yeah. But we're like, turning 30, you're like, what are we doing with our lives? This is crazy. And we're like, well, this is a very easy answer. It was like, we're just going to be photographers. So it's like, and I remember January 4th, 2000, we went and bought our first professional camera at, like, the only camera store that was open.
Which was a Canon A2.
A2 with, like, an 85mm lens.
And a 50. An 85 and a 50.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, here we go. And
then we just started shooting that afternoon. And we actually have an exhibit from, it was a one roll of 36mm film.
Like, from the first roll we shot. 30,
yeah.
Which was basically
36 exposures.
Totally taking of me at this one.
But we used like 12 of those images from the first roll, like in an exhibit. We had an exhibit of like 20 some images of just images that we'd shot of ourselves. And like half of it was from that first roll film.
Then we were lucky because we had bookers in New York at our modeling agencies. We had one in LA. We had Miami Beach. Chicago, where we're from, was a really good market for modeling. Atlanta. And so we could test models and make money, you know, which is really important when you're trying to be a photographer, because it's like, it's really hard. When people start out, we get people talk to us all the time, and I'm like, man, it's just not easy, because you really can't make a lot of money testing, you know, and it's...
But in LA, it's like, because people can just do headshots, and that's actually lucrative. It's one thing that people always need in Los Angeles, so... If you can just start doing headshots of your friends and things like that, and you just slowly build up. Clearly, one of your friends is going to be on a show someday.
And I mean, that's for LA people.
Yeah, LA people.
But it's like, if you don't live in a place where there's not, you know, there's not entertainment kind of people around, like actors and people that need that kind of stuff, I don't know what, I mean, I guess that's why you go into shooting weddings or shooting something else, but... We have done weddings before too in the beginning. We did a couple of friends. I'm like, that is the hardest job in the world. It's like
it's very tough.
Like, that's a whole thing. But you can make a great living doing it. Like, an incredible living doing it.
They're the most difficult clients you could ever
we actually like shooting the weddings. Incredible moments and doing that stuff. But it's just the aftermath, which just like getting images to them and doing all this other stuff, and we're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
There's a reason that those TV shows of reality about it.
Do you think, and I know you both said that they weren't what you wanted to do, but do you think your previous careers, because I know you graduated from the University of Illinois in economics, do you think any of your skills you learned in your previous career has helped you to grow your photography business? I'm thinking purely of from the business side, not the creative side.
God, I don't know how much it translates. I'm sure it does.
Maybe it's just because you're familiar with that kind of stuff, and you know. But it's still the photography business. I guess it's just kind of the general way of how you organize your life, period, especially with regards to money and accepting or putting out invoices. I mean, I was in sales for Ernest and Julio Gallo, like the biggest wine company in America, dealing with like freaking grocery stores. I was in the wine business, but it's like, you know, plus I had to be a salesman. So it's like, I guess that definitely translates.
And I guess as a banker, like, when I have money, I'm great, you know, but like, I'm like, the only reason I think about it, I think it's just the trauma of going through like starving artist periods of your career
we had extreme starving artist period.
Yeah, you know? Which I think builds you better than anybody.
Thankfully we had this incredible loft in Brooklyn that we rented, which was in the ghetto when we first got it. And we're like, this may be the dumbest thing. It was in Bushwick, Brooklyn, which now Bushwick is like the place to be, which we're like, God, we should have hung on to that.
I think it does help with our business, like being good with money and things like that, and just knowing about money and what to do with it and stuff like that. But Yeah, it's so funny. I don't even think about that. Like, yeah.
You know, it's just interesting because sometimes they're often those jobs, they're just the thing you did before you do what you do now. But sometimes, yeah. And they don't always, but sometimes there's life lessons that you hadn't realized you'd learned from those jobs.
It's maybe just a work ethic, you know, it's a work ethic thing where you're always, and we were treating it like a business because a lot of people just don't understand.
Yeah.
It's a business. You got to go and you got to shoot. And guess what? You're not going to like shooting a lot of the stuff till you get, you know, hell, we shoot tons of stuff we don't like, you know.
And actually, it's like, you're right. It does wear off because, you know, as a banker, my hours were like from like 7:30 to 4:30 every day.
Oh,
so
right.
We get up very early every day, regardless of what we're doing that day, editing. Yeah. I get up and do something and try to keep business hours at least to keep yourself. Because you can get.
Yeah, when we were first like in New York and had that place in Brooklyn, Drew lived in the East Village and I lived at the studio. And he would just come in every morning. It's like coming in every morning. It was like we treated it like 9 to 5, you know?
Yeah.
And we would work all day sending emails, doing what you got to do, connecting. And we had a shoot that day.
Yeah.
I mean, we got into retouching like right away and started taking classes doing that. We were building websites from the beginning too, started taking classes doing that. So we really did treat it like a business, I guess. Now that you start talking through it, you're like, well, yeah, we invested in that web design class. You invest in those kind of things. Because when you're poor, you know, like back in the day, trying to get a website, back in the day, people would charge you $20,000 for a website. I was like, $20,000? Like, who's going to pay? Who can pay that? You know? I'm like, plan B, go to this, you know, artist collective in Brooklyn. And for $300 a month, we could take unlimited classes. And one of them was a web design class. And it's like, okay, cool. Well, that's check that box. I mean, it took like 3 months, but it was worth it, you know.
Websites are definitely one of those things, and you're absolutely right. When you look back to even a decade ago, what people were charging, and I guess because it's a true skill to be able to code is a real skill. But of course, now we have Squarespace, we have WordPress, but those things didn't exist. So they were expensive.
Yeah, especially if you wanted something to look good. I mean, there was something that looked good that was moving or any kind of like customization of it, you know. And plus, then they would have this a la carte way of building a website where they would charge per image upload. I was like, this is so expensive. Oh my God. If we want anything changed on it, that's going to be $200. I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
While we're on the subject of websites, actually, you guys now have a vast body of work behind you. How do you whittle down to decide what images you'll display on your website to showcase your work?
Well,
it's a long process. Yeah, because it is, you can't put too much on there. It just clutters it up, and you really have to narrow it down. Ours has not been updated, but that's one thing we have to do. Like, today we should be starting.
We thought, you know, during this quarantine and all this stuff, like, how much we're going to get done on that website, and we literally haven't touched it. But it's like...
You just kind of edit. I'm trying to. It's a long process.
Editing, I would say, is the absolute number one skill for a photographer to succeed because you need to know what that image is. You know, at least what we've experienced that, and it is an amazing blessing to get to work with like a really talented art director that you can see how they see your work. Because then you start seeing things and what they see, you're like, oh my goodness, okay. And then, like for us, we have to look at something 10 times before we pick our favorites almost. Because it can evolve and it's hard.
Like we'll edit down, we'll go through one round.
Sometimes it's easy, though. Sometimes it's like, oh man, that's clearly it, move on.
But sometimes when we've shot a celebrity, like clearly we need to put this person on our website. We need to go through this shoot. It may not have been your favorite shoot or something, only in studio or something. But, so you go through it and you're like, okay, what's really going to be it?
This is a high profile person. We have to find something.
We'll go revisit it like the next day. Just give it some time, go back. Revisit and then just start cropping and playing a little more, and then because it's so funny, in one day you're like, God, these look stupid. These ones look stupid, and then you're like, okay, this is what it's all about. And then you kind of just, it takes us about 3 times of going through to really
probably 3 times
find which image is your image. You know?
That seems to be a common theme with nearly every photographer I've spoken to, actually, that reflection time when going through the edit process. What does it offer you guys? What does that reflection time away offer you when you revisit the images?
Well, I think one thing I have to do is forget the shoot in my mind with distance somehow, because when you edit, like the first time you go through something, the shoot is you're kind of like your mind is still polluted with all the thoughts of that day and like
all the behind the scenes stuff going on. Yeah.
And maybe you're still upset that you didn't get to shoot exactly what, you know, you have all these lingering kind of thoughts about what was happening that day.
Yes, of course.
Like when I'm sitting and he shoots most of the time and I'm looking through it and I'm like, oh man, this is what we got.
Well,
I was picturing here, where the hell?
I mean, the fights that we have in editing, because he doesn't see the camera a lot, and we try hard never to shoot with a monitor. Because it just, unless a client is absolutely, you know, there's a lot of clients that need them.
But it
just slows things down so much. But a lot of times he's never seen an actual frame until it starts uploading. And it's like, oh my God. Like he'll just start freaking the fuck out. And it's like, bro, calm down. That's the beginning. I swear I got there, and you're going through, and I'm like, God, I hope I shot something wider on that. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. You know? So we'll go around. It's like, he'll just, like, I mean,
you'd think after this many, I mean, we've been shooting together, I guess, 25 years, 20 years professionally, you know, full time. Yeah. It's all trust, and we do have that trust, but there's certain times when I'm like, because you just get caught up. He gets caught up in what's going on. I think I'm standing right to the side going like, I'm picturing like, okay, he's shooting here, and then it's something different. So then I have to kind of let that go when I'm editing. And then by the next time we go through it, I've let it go. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like this is great. Okay. I get what you're going for. This is perfect.
Yeah. But it was weird in the beginning. Drew was the one shooting like all the time. Like in the, when
we actually started shooting under my name, under Drew Riker. Cause we just didn't, there were no teams or anything.
We just thought it would be cheesy. These identical twin models trying to shoot and like, so we're like, okay, it's going to be
when we started the film, and, you know, I was the only one shooting, and Derek was assisting.
Well, because it was under your name, too.
Yeah, so cool, clearly. Like, yeah.
So it was like, okay, I'm going to...
Yeah. So it's so funny.
So I would direct, he would shoot, and then it just like...
It's so funny how it's evolved completely the other way.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions, actually, because there are two of you. Do you have a natural job role each when you go on a shoot, or prior to going on the shoot, will you sit down and go, right, for this, I'll do this, you do that, and then divvy up the roles?
Yeah, we used to divvy it up more, like, but now it's got to the one basic
system. Now it's pretty much strictly, I deal with, like, the Derek, myself, and, like, the first assistant, and getting all the, I handle all the computer file stuff and the camera.
Yeah.
And then Drew's pretty much
just directing.
He's on set. Dealing
I'm directing
with everything
everyone,
else.
Getting, I'm always the one dealing with the subject, like directly telling them what we're going to do, go and explain, kind of just keep changing it up and just, because we like to keep it fluid and they like keep moving. So I'm always directing, like the subject always has something to do. It never gets too tiring, or we'll switch the...
Because a lot of times what our work is literally the white seamless kind of like cover try type of stuff, which is like... Yeah. You know, an art form in itself to make that good, because it's like you're really kind of limited. So
So he shoots mostly. I direct. Drew directs, and then even in post production, usually he will edit through the first run, because it's so much for two people to be sitting down. And we shoot a lot. I mean, he shoots a ton of pictures. It's like 2,500 images a shoot minimum, probably.
I often tell people like, the difference between a professional photographer and an amateur is how many pictures you do. And I'm like, you just have more options, you know.
Yeah. Now, hang on. If we say 2,500, how long are we talking to shoot here?
That's like a few 4 hours, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, just it like could be a few hours. Because it's really fast in between moments. Where
and we like a lot of movement, so then it's just like, you know, he hates it, but I'll put it on this high-speed stuff, but... and it really, you know, we've been shooting like Sony, the 7R4 lately, and that thing can shoot so fast, but those files are also so giant, so it eats up hard drive space. And
we need a hard drive.
I mean, Capture One is like dying when it's like, if it's over 3,500 images, I put it into two sessions, because otherwise the computer just can't handle it, you know.
Yeah. Well, actually, that was going to be one of my questions as well. From the moment when you finish a shoot and you take the card out of the camera, what does your process look like in terms of software that you use or any systems that you have in place?
Yeah. We use Capture One. We've been using that for I don't know how long now, but it's just, I mean, we don't know what we'd do without that. You know, we've had assistants that are Lightroom people that haven't done that before, but we much prefer Capture One. We tried to like do Lightroom at one point. We're like, why are we doing this? We're full on, and all of our assistants and like at professional places always are Capture One pretty much.
Yeah,
so.
Capture One. So
if our assistants haven't downloaded it during,
I was just going to say, what does Capture One offer you that you like so much about the workflow?
Well, it's mostly the processing tools. I mean, I do love how, you know, you can categorize the stuff, and I do like the sessions.
Yeah.
But I mean, the real reason is the processing of it and what we can do with it. You know, the raw
and the tool, like, whatever the filter, whatever the color, the tonal curves, whatever the.
Yeah, and we have this, and we do have a what's the name of that one thing? We have all these plugins with all the. Every film that's ever been, you know, like we've got, because we used to shoot film, so we still feel comfortable in that. People are like, what are you talking about? It's like,
we just use this plugin software that's literally, it has every film that's ever been built, you know, and it processes the tonal curve according to whatever that film is. So
I see.
Depending on which shooting the color we picked.
Like you can
films.
See what T-Max 100 versus Tri-X 400 looks like, and you're just like, oh, wow. And you just kind of like, if we're shooting black and white or like want to process it black and white, we'll put it into that and see how it goes. But also with Capture One, you can recover highlights or the shadows. It's just it's
new
brilliant what
one,
you can do.
The new Capture One is so insane because you can go plus or minus four stops. And the controls they have with black shadows and highlights and whites at the high ends, you can bring anything back. You can make something look any way you want. It's
like someone always like asks, like, do you miss film and all that stuff? And I'm like, not at all, not even close. Because first of all, it's just like if you screw up the exposure on that and it's like, oh my God, that was such a magic moment. And then these days, I mean, I love a blurred shot or something that's not, you know, sharp as can be.
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of people don't like, you know, things that are blurred a little bit, but with digital, it's just like you have so much leeway, and you're, you know, I don't lose sleep over it anymore because
no, you like can control it. I mean, you can totally screw up a shoot and bring it back. Like you could literally have it four stops off.
Because I mean, generally, we're not really technical. I mean, we know how to do the stuff, but you know, every once in a while, we shoot spontaneously like crazy, where it's like. You know, if you're shooting natural light, what comes side light comes back lit real quick, and you're like, oh man, I didn't adjust the camera or whatever. Yeah. And so thank God, you know, for Capture One sometimes, because it's literally, it doesn't even matter. You can like bring things back.
It's a miracle. Yeah.
It's incredible. And then even with graininess, you can get rid of that stuff in Capture One if it's too much, or I mean, it's really a lifesaver, I think, for imaging.
But so. It just allows us to make anything look exactly how we want. Or if our client needs it to look a different, you know, a certain way. If there's so much control in it, it's great.
Oh my God. Color wise, you can do anything, you know, it's really amazing. So
do you find
Capture One life? You know?
Because you've mentioned it a few times, because you understand how film works, which I'll be honest with you, I am very much in the digital camp, and film scares the life out of me. Mainly because
scary as hell. Yeah,
you know what you guys said earlier. You can take a shot and you don't know what you've got for a couple of days. That is terrifying for me. But
that sounds like horrible.
Yeah, I can't live.
Do you think that because you understand and have shot on film and know how it works, do you think that has given you a style of photography that you've carried forward into the digital era?
Yeah, because we still would like it to look like it's shot like on film. We're romantics about, you know, the 80s and 90s fashion stuff where it wasn't so, like, everything's so micro-focused and perfect and digital-looking sometimes, which we're not huge fans of that so much. We wanted to make it look more vintagey in a way, more 90s.
Yeah, and I mean, we try to, like, keep it more because the rhythm of shooting when you're doing film, I still romanticize about that. It's great where you just pay more attention before you're filming, you know, before you're actually shooting, and like really like get in your mind or like set up before, because a lot of people, you can see they're just shooting whatever it is and they'll just deal with it in editing. You know, it's like shoot, just keep shooting and shoot whatever. And I still like to come up with a very specific kind of, you know, set up for this shot with where they're going to be, that kind of thing. And like try to keep the rhythm kind of the way it used to be, you know?
Yeah.
It's just different. It's just different.
So. Well, that's why we really don't like shooting with monitors, you know, when you're shooting like people in the entertainment business, a lot of people like they want to be able to see every frame, which is just so debilitating as like an artist or trying to get a real moment, because someone sees one bad frame, especially if it's an actress and they're like, their publicist or someone's like, oh, that looks horrible, you know, just because of one movement of something, they're like, oh my God, she looks horrible, or she looks,
it,
you know.
It only creates bad things on set.
And then it slows it down and it makes the shoot just drag out. And well, you miss great moments. The actress gets in her head because someone's complaining. One person can complain about something and because everyone's watching every shot. And
I know we almost have this saying, like, before we start shooting, it's like, don't say anything negative, please. about anything, because once that an actress or an actor
goes south
on it, you can't. It's hard to come back. You know, you can say yeah. So it's like we much prefer not to have those on set. You just lose all control if you have a monitor and everyone's looking at it. You know, other people will start directing the person.
Yeah,
and you're like, whoa. Oh. Why is the stylist doing this right now? Like, hey, calm down. You know, it's like.
Do you find because there's two of you on set that there is a different energy perhaps than there would be with just one photographer? And I say this because I work quite a lot with a very good friend of mine, and when we're on set, we're equals. It's not a photographer and an assistant. We are equal. Yeah. We may do different jobs, and we may not always be, one of us may be shooting and one may be doing something else, but we're equal. And I think there is a respect that we get from the client because of that. Do you guys find that because there's two of you and two equals rather than a principal and an assistant?
I think that energy is a big part of our success, especially being out here in the entertainment kind of world. It's like, they respect both of us and, you know.
Yeah, the more you can kind of spread out, because we like it to be a collaboration with the stylist, the hair and makeup, everyone that's on set. There to pay, you know, getting paid to, you know, to do what they're there for. We like to give them all respect, and everyone's got good ideas. Like, we don't like to put ourselves above everyone in the room. Like, we'll make the final call.
Even we have assistants that have great ideas all the time, and I'm like, brilliant, thank God you're here, bro. It's like,
shooting as a team, just being able to collaborate between just two people instead of just one set of eyes, you've got four eyes on things. And just because that's like at the top, everyone's looking at that, I think they feel more free to get in to a creative conversation because it's all of a sudden it's between two, it's between three.
And ultimately, and I'm sure you find this when you're shooting as a team, decisions just get made faster on set, which means there's like people feel certain about things and then everyone's comfortable. And then it's like the day just runs smoother. If people are delayed in making a decision, it seems like they're not sure of themselves. If people aren't sure of themselves, that can crumble into like everyone not being confident about what's happening.
I mean, there's so much pressure.
You know, it just snowballs. And it's like, I think certainty on set is literally, it's got to be there or people won't trust you. And then when the trust is gone, it's like, you know, you're not going to get great pictures. Mm. You know?
So on the note of great pictures, what for you guys makes a great portrait?
I mean, just someone just deeply connected and being themselves,
like
and like where they can see themselves in it that maybe no picture or common pictures they've had of themselves don't really capture, you know?
It's like there just has some light in the picture, whether that's great lighting or just the light in the eye or in the movement or something they're doing, you just realize, you know.
Yeah, there's some kind of life happening that's, you know, that's authentic and it feels real, you know?
And we like it to be joyful and smile. I mean, our best are like, because we love smiles, we love smiley pictures and things like that, which was crazy when we, you know, shooting, a lot of people don't want smiley stuff. And we were like, oh my God, people more kind of
angst-filled, like fashion-y, you know, which, you know, that's fine and dandy, but anyone can shoot that, I feel, you know.
But even like shooting a portrait of a person, it really just, we want to be able to break somebody, like, and have them feel really themselves and comfortable. And it's just something in the eyes when they just kind of relax for a second.
Well, that's like, you go. I don't know if you've seen that portrait of David Hockney that we took, which was just one of the best days we ever had.
Yeah.
Which he lives up on Mulholland Drive. And,
really?
You know, we get there and he's napping. So it's like, the studio is like this brilliant French guy, right?
Yeah.
And so we're just visiting with him for about an hour and a half.
I mean, and his home is amazing. His studio is just incredible.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is just unbelievable. I mean, he's so legendary.
The natural light in this giant studio, we're like, well, this is going to be an incredible photo because look at the light in here.
Yeah.
He's got like all of his like charcoal things are hanging around us. And we're like, this is going to be amazing. But I'm like, he walks in and I mean, he's disheveled and like
from a
he's
mask,
been sleeping yeah. in his suit,
in his
and,
suit.
And he just looks tired, you know, and you're like, oh my goodness. Like, how are we? And we're trying to engage him and he was, you know.
Yeah, he's not very talkative.
We're like, this is a disaster. And yeah. I mean, I think I ended up only because he started looking annoyed. But
it took maybe 40 frames, right?
You were there? No, it's like 20.
20.
Like 20 frames of him. And thank God there's one in there where he's just on his cigarette, kind of like whatever.
And he kind of gets the joke, like he's been difficult. He's been like, you know, just kind of like smirks a little bit. And it's very subtle, but you
like, oh man.
Okay, he likes us. Okay, that's all he's going to give us. It's great, you know.
But it was just one kind of real thing that he was doing in the picture, because otherwise it just looks like he's standing there. So.
He's
like,
annoyed.
Yeah. Or like, thank God we got at least one frame with that.
And his studio manager was like, oh, he loves you guys. We're like, oh, really? Because
he didn't show it.
And then the editor of the magazine was like, oh, it's so brilliant. We're like, oh, thank God. Because, you know.
Yeah.
Because we didn't really know. We were driving home and I'm like going through in the car, looking through the frames. I'm like,
I mean, it's
oh.
David Hockney, so you can't miss. I mean, he's a legend. I mean, so whatever you get is really going to be usable because... If it's very serious and he's just standing there, that works too. If he's just like doing nothing, but as for Riker Brothers' picture, we wanted to get something other than just standing there. So
I'm pleased you mentioned that actually, because it was going to be one of my questions. That was, have you ever found yourself in a situation on a shoot where circumstances outside of your control as photographers could have affected your work, and how did you ensure, or how did you overcome those circumstances to ensure your work remained true to what you and your style is?
Yeah,
this is one of our first stories, and this kind of was like, I think, made us who we are as photographers. Like early on in our career, we're shooting for Cosmo magazine, and we did this, we shot all their men stuff. Like they'd have this 4-page thing each month of these hot guys, whatever. And then they asked us to do their bachelor issue, and we shoot one guy from each state for the bachelor. It's like a bachelor issue.
50 guys.
And we're shooting in the Hamptons, and plus they're flying themselves in from all over the country. We had to shoot 18 guys in one day, 17
the next.
The first day of shooting, it rained eight inches in the first day. It's pouring the whole time. And like, we have the most beautiful location, but it's pouring and we have to shoot.
Thunderstorms and pouring.
So I mean, literally, we just got a white tent for us to stand under to shoot, and a white umbrella, and it's pouring, but the whole thing was just don't freak out. And like, we were freaked out the whole time. It's like, what the hell is this going to look like? The locations were great. The light's kind of deep and incredible because it's not sunny, but it's rich and dark. Like,
yeah, because it's just like a giant softbox. At least it's kind of like,
even when it was
glowing light, it was consistent through the whole day. It's like, how did, you know, because which is challenging to shoot that many people throughout an entire day without the light going bad at some point.
Oh, when it's perfectly sunny, it's really difficult.
Yeah.
So this was just something like, I guess we're going to do it. And at least we were just like, well, screw it. I mean, the clients here, they know we're screwed. It's pouring rain all day.
But literally,
but
those photos from those 2 days are still like,
they were
like,
so incredible.
The most beautiful pictures they've ever seen, whatever. And it's like,
and because of that day, it's like, we don't care what the weather is. We would cancel shoots all the time on rain day. But now it just turned, that's what the photos were meant to be. And it was just incredible. And we shot so fast because the lighting doesn't change. You could put anyone in anywhere, and it looked exactly the same.
Made it easier.
Yeah,
in the end, because
you kind of had your own mini studio outdoors.
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah, basically is a perfectly lit studio anywhere you look. So it was great.
So just going through that whole process and that job, and then once it was published and we got these big checks, because we got paid by the page back then, we're like, wow, that was like one of our best jobs ever. And it literally started out as like the most stressful day of our lives. And
yeah.
You just go with the flow, and the pictures are going to make themselves. It doesn't matter. It's like literally about the energy of the day so much.
You know, having a good sense of humor about shit, because it's like this ain't rocket science, and we're dealing with like, you know, actors promoting a TV show. Like, this isn't that important, you know. And if people are taking themselves that seriously, it's like we're able to do it usually. You know? But you are presented with bad situations like that in what we do all the time. I mean,
you're given like so little time to shoot some people. You're like, okay, you have to shoot them for, I'm trying to think of an example of something recent. I should have come up with it before I started
I'm pleased you said the weather though, because I've asked that question to a few photographers, all of which have been based here in the UK, and the answer is always the weather. So I'm pleased that even in glorious, where were you in New York?
That was New York. LA, it never rains. I mean, it literally never rains here. So,
but it can be way too hot.
But like right now, if we had to shoot today, it would be a disaster. Like especially if you were shooting a woman today,
you would
with hair and makeup. It would probably be really challenging. Just too hot right now, and it's like they're going to be like, I'm sweating. And
Well, look, in that case, before I you lose enormous amounts of weight just sweating in the heat, I've got a few more questions for you, and then I'll let you go and enjoy your day. Do you have any personal projects that you like to work on outside of your commissioned work?
Well, a lot. It's funny because your personal project turns into, like, because we're getting a lot more into video, and we love shooting. Music videos are so fun and so creative to do. So, and really to evolve in this business as a photographer, you need to be able to, like, to get paid by the clients here in town and whatever, you really need to be able to do video, because still pictures, like modern advertising and things, it's all social media based and stuff like that. Everyone needs video, you know. So we've been shooting a lot more video and projects like that.
It just opens your number of jobs that you can do.
We shoot like our own personal fine art kind of stuff that we're starting to get into, which is just more just like nature-y, palm tree stuff, basically just for us, just like decorate our homes and stuff. I'm like, any other fine art stuff I'm trying to think that we've been doing?
I mean, a lot of, like, we're going to be doing this more Black Lives Matter type oriented thing, but we're doing it for a client. So we kind of like incorporate any of those kind of portrait things.
Yeah, because we're lucky we're getting signed on to be creative directors of this new lingerie brand. And one of the projects, it would be a personal project, but now we get to shoot it for them. It's like we're shooting a bunch of women of color, like young women of color that are all these activists and things like that. So we're going to be doing portraits, but it's going to be more video and talking about their passion, but just basic white background studio,
pretty kind of old school Calvin Klein type of thing. Confession type of stuff, like the 90s kind of campaign.
That's kind of the more personal stuff, is getting more political and helping in the activism through our art, I guess, would be the
thing. See.
And
I'm pleased that you mentioned video, actually, because is that something, because obviously it's not the area that you guys began, it's not where you started your work, but is that something that has served you well throughout your careers, just that ability and want to keep improving and exploring new avenues?
That's everything.
Well, you know, Herb Ritz, who we're so close to, he did some of the most iconic, you know, black and white, and, you know, actually not really black and white, but videos from like Madonna to Janet Jackson and stuff, and like that Chris Isaacs video with Helena Christensen, most people remember.
Yeah.
And it's like those, and even those videos, we've always been interested in a moving picture just from him, because then before he died, he was wanting to do a full feature film, and we talked to him about his video work, because it's hilarious. He's told the stories about like his first video was the Cherish video of Madonna, And since he wasn't familiar with video, he had an 85 lens or so, yeah, or something. So but he didn't have the proper lens. So if you watch that video,
it's so ultra tight
and whatever. Oh my God, what was I doing? You know?
Yeah, you're like, oh, that's why it looks that way. That's the only lens he had, and it's ultra tight and stuff.
But plus, we also do approach our video just like we look at a photo frame, like when we look through a camera. So it really does set you apart from other people's video work that didn't come from fashion photography, for sure.
Yeah,
we like coming in tight and doing like beauty, and
video the same way we shoot like our pictures, and which is different from most people out here. Like if you come from the camera world, you're more of a camera guy they shoot more wide-angle-y stuff, yeah, and making sure everything's
the first few DPs we used to use would shoot things so wide, and we're like, wow, this just isn't looking the way I want it to. And so we do all of our own mostly now. Yeah. We can DP all of our own. Yeah. So it's like, and that works out great for a team because
it's already built in as a team shooting video, because then
it makes perfect sense.
DP, and then I'm the director, like especially for music videos and stuff is what we've shot,
which music videos are the easiest thing technically to do because it's basically art. You're not worried about sound, you know. It's like people like, I'm like, it's literally like the easiest thing you can do, you know. And then there's no real story, like we don't get into narrative stories for music videos. We kind of like prefer them
more
to be
like
more
fashion
things.
Yeah. But which makes it really easy because you can just edit it anyway.
Yeah, of course, because you've got the track.
Your question is that we do all of our own editing as well. And I do think that it set us apart early on as being ahead of the game. Like even we retouching, we started doing our own retouching like 2001.
Yeah, like,
and
so,
forever ago.
So we do that. We used to make a ton of money retouching that.
But and now we do.
That
all
was
of
a
our,
magic trick for sure.
But now we do all of our own video editing as well, and to be able to do that and offer that to a client as well, you know, when we have time, clearly. But just that you're aware of everything that.
And
goes
it is fun to mix it up. On days we get to do that. On days we're doing still stuff. It definitely makes it more fun day to day. You know. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we get to do something amazing for a living. So it's like we know that we're super lucky and blessed, and it's like, you know.
Yeah, and then we just stuck it out. It's really persistence in staying in the business this long. I mean, we're turning 50 in a couple weeks. And,
You're not.
Yeah, and we're like, okay,
yeah,
okay. I get why. Like, finally, like we're getting good. We don't even need it. We got rid of our agents like over a year ago now.
Yeah,
but we really don't need them because people are just contact us directly. Like even during the quarantine, even more importantly, a lot of these celebrities, just because we know them personally, they've invited us to their homes to do shoots for their businesses and things like that. So literally just being in the business this long, your network just keeps growing and growing. And
I'm genuinely blown away that you guys are nearly 50. I had no idea. Wow.
Lots of wisdom here, you know.
Yeah. Goodness, man.
We get to wake up and do what we love every day, you know? Like you don't have that stress about your life of, like, we get up to do our passion every morning. There's that stress. Like, I can't believe my life is this. And I just remember from being a banker at my job of, like, that's all that was in my mind every morning. I got up going, like, oh, I can't believe I got to go sit in this office all day long for what? Like, this is my life?
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't had a boss, you know, like we've been working for ourselves, you know, since we were, you know, since 93. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, look, I'm going to ask you a few quick fire questions, and I'm not necessarily looking for anything deep, anything meaningful. I'm just looking for a gut reaction, and either of you or both can answer this. So, black and white or color?
Such a Lord.
That's such a tough
I love
question.
Them so much. I'll go black and white.
I'll go color.
Because
it's so funny because it's so different. Yeah, like because black and white is like such a fine art thing, and it's clearly like people love black and white because that's not how you see. We see in color naturally. So when you see a black and white photo, it's so captivating a lot of times.
It seems more important.
Yeah. But to do a really amazing, there's nothing like an incredible color picture that with a color, it's its own character of the picture. So it's like, we do both. So it's like, I mean, yeah,
Yeah, so he's going to go on to other things. We don't have to expound on each one of these. Or, yeah, right.
No, but just like black and white, because we go through times like, are people going to take us seriously if we're not shooting more black and white? Or do you, you know,
does it look so commercial if it's a column?
Too commercial. You know, all there's always that battle, you know. But
I guess that's why, again, working as two of you is really good, because you're both of you, your natural instinct was the opposite there, actually, which was quite interesting. But I guess what makes you guys a strong team.
We definitely have two philosophies too. Like, I've like wanted to take a million pictures to get that one perfect frame. Like, I want one amazing frame. Drew is literally like, he'll direct forever.
Well, that's why I don't.
And he's looking. Yeah, he wants every frame to be perfect. You know, and I'm like, I don't know.
Well, I'm more of a control freak. When I was shooting, I shoot a lot slower, and I just make sure it's something I like. The angle, everything's got to be perfect. So there's somewhere in the middle. He's shooting a million things, and I'm trying to corral him into what I want, basically. And then somewhere in the middle, we get
somewhere it works out.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I know the answer to this, but I've said this to other photographers, and I've been wrong. I think I know Derek's answer, but let's see. Prime or Zoom?
Oh,
well, now this is easy.
I'm Zoom, clearly.
And I'm Zoom now, too, because I don't shoot and he's shooting. But it is funny because we started only on Primes. I was such a Prime snob when we started shooting with film, like just coming from fashion and art world, you know, it's like, but once we started shooting celebrity and stuff and you have limited time to shoot with Prime, like you want to be able to cover everything at once. You can't like take the leg in a different camera and shoot because they always want like full length, tight, three quarters. So we switched to Zoom lenses not that long ago, probably 5 years, like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just because it was like 6 years ago. You don't have time basically to take it off and do that stuff.
So now it's the Zoom just gives you so much freedom now, and that's what our photography is about, is just making giving a subject freedom to just do whatever, and we kind of capture it. So
yes, of course.
The Zoom allows us to just get everything quickly, get a wide shot quick, and go in super tight if you want. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna go. This one many years ago was quite a straightforward Canon or Nikon, but now I'm going to go Canon, Nikon, or other, because there's a lot of other good bodies out there now.
Well, we shoot Sony, so we
have 7R4 right now.
We shoot the Sony 7R4 for most of our stuff now, which is, I mean, it's a 61 megapixel camera. It's
beautiful. The focusing on it is like so reliable.
It's funny because we were Nikon guys, but we shot Canon digital. Because they started in digital before Nikon. They were ahead of the curve with digital. So we switched to Canon when we did digital. But then, what was it, 3 years?
We used to Nikon a few months ago. We were shooting the 850 for a little bit.
But when we started shooting more video on the same days as shooting stills, Canon didn't have auto. Sony was the first camera to come out that had autofocus video. So that's why we switched to Sony back then, because we're on set and we're like, I don't want to have to buy a whole other thing. If we switch to Sony, we can shoot the video with the camera all at the same time and we don't have to worry. So we traded in all of our Canon lenses, cameras, and switched to full Sony like 3 years ago.
Now, forgive my ignorance on the R4. Is that mirrorless?
Yeah, it's mirrorless, yeah.
Yeah, that's a weird. It's an electronic viewfinder too, so it's,
which is weird to get used to if you haven't had it. But it's fine. But now it's weird. When I went back, we were shooting Nikon. It was in January.
Yeah.
And it was so weird to be back after shooting Sony to be like the regular viewfinder and like, oh my god, this is so different now. It's, you know, like with the Sony anymore. If you have the focusing set up properly, you don't even have to think about it because it searches for eyes, it searches for things. It's like you don't even think about focusing. You can just frame it the way it wants. It finds it, and I'm like,
you can have a subject running straight at you, and it just stays in focus.
It just feels like cheating, really, at this point. You know, I mean, we're getting older; it's harder.
Yeah, eyes are going.
But I think that is genuinely one of the wonderful things about the way cameras have evolved. Like you say, it feels like cheating, but it's not. It just makes life so much easier, and it allows you to work more efficiently.
Yeah.
And more reliably, really, because I remember we were really kind of, when we were leaving Canon, it was, we were having focusing issues with that.
Oh,
one,
yeah.
And I was
yeah.
like, oh, man, like, this isn't it. Maybe we'll try that. And, you know, ours, if focusing goes away on an important shoot, you are screwed, you know?
Yeah.
So it's so critical. And we were just having some issues. But, man, I mean, we're not really married to any one brand.
Yeah.
I mean,
because we used a Nikon with the D850. That was great. That was great, too. Like,
yeah.
But okay. Then Sony just came out with it. It's 61 megapixel, the 7R4.
And
the
sometimes,
files are just
plus
massive,
you want to be able to shoot that big billboard stuff. Like, certain clients need you to do larger files like that. And we used a Phase 1 not long ago.
Yeah.
With those backs.
And the 100 megapixel back.
And it's like,
one,
they just don't have the performance of, like, a Sony or a Canon or an Icon. I mean,
literally one frame every, like, 3 seconds.
It was maybe the most painful day of my life in a long time because it just doesn't focus like that. You know, it's like,
clearly the images are amazing if someone's standing still, but for just even a little bit of movement we like to do, so you're just missing all the magical moments. So that's why we shoot mostly, like, Sony, like,
yes,
format. But,
yeah. I also enjoy, and it sounds so much nicer that you guys say Nikon. We say Nikon. We bastardize it over here. Nikon. It sounds so much nicer. I might adopt that. I'm just gonna bring it over here.
I did live in London for a year at one point. So
yes, you should have known.
I should have known. I should remember. Yeah.
No, I much prefer your way. Let's stick with yours. I'm not sure I know the answer to this one. So film or digital?
Digital for sure. 1,000%.
Yeah, just because you can get it to look exactly however you want. If you want it like film, you can make it look like film.
Yeah. And I need to sleep at night, so, you know, I gotta, and you're pretty much guaranteed it's gonna be there. Yeah. Film is tricky. It's a living thing. It's tough. You have to expose it perfectly, you know.
Of course.
And we haven't shot it.
It's baked in the cake when you're shooting film. If you know, it's like you just don't. You can't change it.
How much does a roll of film even cost anymore? I have no idea.
I have no idea.
Photographers doing it and bringing it. Yeah.
Studio light or natural light?
Natural light.
Yeah. Like, we have to shoot this job on Thursday, and like, we love to have a big, like, a studio, but we need this one that we love to shoot at. It just has this huge garage door, at least, so we can have a whole. It's like a 20-some-foot ceiling with the whole door opens up on the side.
And they actually have a scrim that's built for the space. So it's a 20-by-10-foot scrim that fills that space. So,
so it's just like a big light box from the side if you want to do that.
It's all. Anytime we shoot there, it's like people are like, where is this? It's like, my God, how are you lighting this? I'm like, it's natural light. It's just coming. Because it really is. You can't. I don't care how long you've been shooting, you can't get it to look like that.
Yeah, you can't really recreate it, yeah.
I'm glad. I was right. I was right on that one. All right.
There we go.
Last one. Home or abroad?
Home or abroad?
Although I guess for you guys, you mainly shoot in Los Angeles, I would guess.
Yeah, especially now, yeah.
I would say abroad, though, for sure.
We just haven't got... You know, since 2010, when the economy went down, like, we moved to L.A. after the economy went down in 2008, 2009. So
magazines were closing.
And everyone stopped flying everyone everywhere at that point.
For a moment, yeah.
So, yeah, we rarely get to go travel, just a few times a year up to this point.
It's
and it's mostly just to New York. So we'd love to go shoot anywhere.
Oh, there's nothing better than when you get like, wait, where do we get to go? You know?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah,
I did a trip to Borneo and a trip to the Maldives, and I was like, I mean, it's just, that's just cheating when you get to be on those kind of locations. You know? Everything
it's
looks
beautiful
good
everywhere. Yeah.
So
yeah. Okay. All right. One final question: if you could both journey back to spend a day with those fresh-faced youngsters that turned up on a Miami beach and got scouted to be models, what?
Yeah.
Well, firstly, how would you spend the day with them? And secondly, what advice would you give them?
I would just be like, Man, you got to give me some of that confidence that you had, like, no. Kind of crazy.
Oh, you're going to tell them? Yeah, I'm telling them,
yeah. No, like, I'm going to ask them. Like,
as an old person, you're going to ask for your confidence of your younger self.
Yeah, I swear to God. Yeah. It's like, that's the
that's a funny way to answer that.
Yeah.
That's great. Instead of giving your younger self advice, it's funny. Yeah.
I'd be like, yeah, because we were just fearless back then. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah, so, I think that's one of the wonders of youth, isn't it? That fearless energy.
Oh, yeah, I always try to, like, dial that back when I can, because it's like, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think when I would actually tell my younger self of something. Just be like,
well, luckily, our lives, we kind of did. We made choices that we're Virgos, and we're kind of risk-averse people generally, and even being from the Midwest, our dad was a lawyer, our mom was a nurse, we're like the American kind of regular people, you know. We're not the ones that go chasing your dreams and stuff. They're all farmers and, you know, all that stuff. So it's like the fact that we actually went and did it, and I'm so grateful to my younger self for having done it, because it was such a massive decision at the time.
Yeah, that's what I would say, is like, you're doing the right thing. Like, thank God you quit your jobs to be here in Miami. So don't be afraid. Just go keep this fearlessness going. And
otherwise, we'd be picking up photography at 50.
Yeah.
Right now, we'd be like, my God, where did my life go?
I think that is the perfect way to conclude our conversation. Derek and Drew Riker, thank you so much for joining me on the Standout Photography Show.
Yeah, thank you so much,
Matthew. This was amazing.
Absolute pleasure. Now, listen, if people want to go and see and explore your wonderful work, where can they go?
Go to our website,
RikerBrothers.com. And then our Instagram is RikerBrothers.
Yeah,
we'll make sure we update it for people here. We have some good stuff to put on there.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Gents, thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, this all the best. Great. I can't wait. We'll be listening all the time now.
Yeah,
it's such a great show.
I love the show.
That was my conversation with wonderful Derek and Drew Riker. Gents, thank you so much for joining me here on the show. I cannot thank you enough. And I hope you guys enjoyed listening to those wonderful gentlemen as much as I enjoyed speaking with them. If you did, and your ears are enjoying what they are hearing at the Standout Photography Show, please support the show with your words, not your wallets. It takes less than 30 seconds on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening right now, but it does make a huge, huge difference to help us secure only the very finest photographers in the world for you guys to listen to. While we are on the subject, is there a photographer that you would like to hear on the Standout Photography Show? A lot of you have been in touch recently with names and suggestions, and it's thanks to you we have managed to secure some pretty fabulous guests over the coming weeks. So if there is someone you would like to hear from, you can drop me a message personally on Instagram or Twitter at Matthew D. A. Walker. That is Matthew D. A. Walker. Or you can follow the show at The Standout Company. For now, thank you as always for tuning in. I've been Matthew Walker. They have been Derek and Drew Riker. And you have been sensational. Until next time, look after yourselves. Take care.